I would now like to give the floor to His Excellency Augustine Kfe Ngafuan, Minister for Foreign Affairs of Liberia.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, Excellencies, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, I bring you greetings from Her Excellency Mrs. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, President of the Republic of Liberia, who would have been here today to address this august assembly, but chose to remain on the front lines in Liberia to lead our fight against the deadly Ebola virus disease. Mr. President, Liberia congratulates you on your ascendancy to the high office of President of the UN General Assembly and acknowledges the astute statesmanship and wisdom you bring to this important assignment, which inspire confidence for a successful 69th regular session. We assure you of Liberia's full cooperation and support. We pay a special tribute to Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for his able and visionary stewardship of the affairs of this global institution. Mr. President, with just 1 year to the expiration date of the Millennium Development Goals, the theme of this 69th regular session, delivering on and implementing a transformative post-2015 development agenda, could not have been more appropriate. Liberia was put on the pedestal of global honor by the selection of President Sirleaf as one of three co-chairs of a high-level panel formed by the Secretary General in 2012 to advise him on the contours of an ambitious but realistic post-2015 global development agenda, and to define the critical steps required to reinvigorate and sustain global partnership. The panel's report contained a clarion call to leave no one behind, which has been embraced as a motivational theme by many. At the continental level, our president chairs a 10-member high-level committee of African heads of state, under whose leadership a common African position, CAP, was developed and endorsed by the membership of the African Union. The CAP is anchored on six pillars, which represent Africa's vision of the prerequisites for the eradication of poverty on the continent and for its future and development. We are encouraged that the concepts and strategies defined under each of the pillars have been significantly incorporated in the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. This gives us optimism that the substance of these pillars will form an integral part of the post-2015 development agenda. As we await the Secretary General's synthesis report, I can assure you of Liberia's continued active participation in the negotiations that lie ahead. Mr. President, as we survey the regional and international political landscapes, we are becoming increasingly concerned about the spread of extremist ideologies and terrorist activities in the world, especially in Africa. Whether it is Al-Shabaab in Somalia and Kenya, Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, or Boko Haram in Nigeria, the African continent has not been spared the deadly and destructive consequences of extremism. Additionally, over the past year, while peace processes were being consolidated in many countries in Africa, we have sadly witnessed the eruption or exacerbation of conflicts on the continent, notably in South Sudan in the Central African Republic. We laud efforts undertaken by the AU and the UN to resolve these conflicts and join the call for sustained international action to bring about a more secure and peaceful world. Liberia commends the Secretary General for convening a high-level climate summit last week, which elicited concrete commitments from the global community on reducing greenhouse emissions and other measures aimed at achieving sustainable development. As a small country and one that is still endowed with 43% of the remaining Guinea forests, we are proud that we too concluded partnership agreements and made concrete commitments aimed at supporting the goals of sustainable, climate-sensitive development. Small countries like Liberia contribute less to greenhouse emissions, but suffer disproportionately from the adverse impact of climate change. To right this anomaly, and in the united spirit of saving our one world, all countries, big or small, must make proportionate commitments to save our planet and take concrete actions to actualize such commitments. Mr. President, 1 year ago, when President Sirleaf addressed this August Assembly, it was a more positive message from a president who reported significant achievements in the past and lofty aspirations for the future. President Sirleaf, exuding gratitude, informed the world that Liberia had just celebrated 10 years of peace in August 2013, and in spite of some challenges, was still registering remarkable progress on the path of social economic development. The country had transitioned from the emphasis on stabilization to a focus on transformation within the framework of a long-term development agenda, Christine Vision 2030. The president also informed the assembly that the Mano River Basin, comprising Liberia, Guinea, Cote d'Ivoire, and Sierra Leone, was at peace and was pursuing regional integration through initiatives that will facilitate connectivity in our power and transport systems, thereby enhancing cross-border trade in which our market women are mostly engaged. She even reported on how a small contingent of Liberian peacekeepers who are today still in Mali had contributed to the laudable UN peacekeeping effort that created an enabling environment for stability and democratic transition in that country. 1 year later, as I stand to address this august body, I have become the purveyor of a different kind of story, a sad story. Over the past 6 months, a dark cloud has been hanging over the Liberian landscape, such that instead of reporting on economic growth, we are constrained to report economic decline. Implementation of virtually all pillars of our agenda for transformation has been placed on hold, and gains are perhaps already being reversed. Instead of devoting attention to regional integration through facilitation of power and transport projects, we are now talking about regional cooperation to deal with a deadly enemy. The market woman who traded goods and services across borders a year ago is now constrained to remain within the borders of her country and suffer the consequences of economic inactivity. Mr. President, the deadly enemy that has visited so much harm and misery on my country and our neighbors is the Ebola virus disease, which began wreaking havoc in Liberia in March of this year. Since the outbreak, the government of Liberia has taken a host of measures. We declared a state of emergency, suspended schools, and with the constructive involvement of our stakeholders, including pastors, imams, chiefs, elders, youths, government officials, opposition politicians, have stepped up awareness and prevention campaigns to address the crystallized denial and deeply rooted traditional and cultural practices that create a fertile ground for the spread of the disease. We have also committed, and will continue to commit, significant portions of our own poultry resources to the fight. In spite of these efforts, buttressed by our partners, Ebola has confounded all of us and has sprinted faster than our collective efforts, snuffing out the life candle of more than 1,800 of our compatriots, with a total of nearly 3,500 infected. Cumulatively, women, constituting a majority of our health workforce and being the main caregivers in our deeply traditional society, have been disproportionately affected. Sadly, as Ebola widens its deadly circumference, it is creating a trail of traumatized orphans across the country, which includes that 10-year-old kid from Bakedo, Lofa County, who is the last person standing in a family of 12. Our already limited pool of health workers has further reduced because 89 of them have fallen victim to the virus out of a total of 182 infected. The resultant panic that arises from health workers seeing their colleagues die from Ebola has precipitated the closure of many health facilities across the country. As we and our many international partners struggle to douse the wildfire caused by Ebola, we have been left with inadequate resources, time, and personnel to attend to other routine illnesses like malaria, typhoid fever, and measles, thereby causing many more tangential deaths. An increasing number of pregnant women are dying in the process of bringing forth life. In short, our public health system, which totally collapsed during years of conflict and was being gradually rebuilt, has relapsed under the weight of the deadly virus. Mr. President, Ebola is not just a health crisis. It is a total crisis. It is an economic crisis, a social crisis, and a potential political and security crisis. Indeed, its deleterious impact has been very wide and very deep. On the economic front, it has occasioned a 3.4% downward slide in economic growth in Liberia. And some experts have predicted that if not contained quickly, could cause a 12% decline in our economy in 2015. As a result of the slowdown in economic activities, our revenue generation capacity has been seriously undermined, thereby constricting our ability to provide for basic social services and continue to fund key development projects. The suspension of flights, as well as the travel and other restrictions or sanctions imposed on Liberia and other affected countries, contrary to expert advice from WHO and others, did not only undermine the humanitarian efforts aimed at quickly containing the disease, but also aggravated the adverse economic effects of the Ebola crisis. Mr. President, as destructive as the Liberian civil conflict was, at least our people knew the warring factions and the front lines. With Ebola, the enemy is more insidious, and there are no clear-cut front lines because someone's child, someone's husband, someone's workmate could actually be the enemy and the front line at the same time. This difficult feature of the disease, coupled with a host of other challenges, occasioned its rapid spread. We are heartened that through separate and joint appeals of the heads of state of Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, to the UN Secretary General, and leaders of friendly countries and institutions, the international community is showing a better appreciation of the unprecedented scope and magnitude of the Ebola outbreak in our countries. There is a chorus of leaders advocating and committing to support more robust, scaled up, and urgent assistance to the affected countries. With gratitude to the Secretary General and other world leaders, the last few weeks has witnessed a host of positive developments that constitute a major heightening of focus and scaling up of the international response. These developments include the announcement by President Barack Obama of the United States of his government's decision to scale up assistance to the region, including the deployment of 3,000 military and medical personnel to help us with the fight. The Security Council's meeting on 18 September under the leadership and presidency of the United States and the adoption of Resolution 2177, which recognized the Ebola crisis as a threat to international peace and security, necessitating strong and concerted international response through firm commitments of support, and called on member states to lift travel and other restrictions imposed on affected countries. The announcement by the Secretary General on 18 September of his intention to establish the UN Mission for Ebola Emergency Response, OMEA, which was formally endorsed by Resolution A/69/1, tabled by the President of the General Assembly and adopted by the Assembly on 19 September. The start of deployment by the African Union contingents of medical and relevant personnel drawn from across Africa to Liberia and other West-affected countries. The convening by the Secretary General on 25 September of a high-level meeting on the Ebola epidemic, which witnessed the announcement of substantial commitments of assistance by many countries. These concrete demonstrations of solidarity have taken many forms, and we are deeply grateful for all of them. But they should not lead us toward complacency, because we definitely have not yet achieved the 20-fold increase in response recommended by the experts to contain the disease. Additionally, while we struggle with the first wall of actually disrupting the transmission of Ebola, we must begin to prepare for the second wall of tackling the longer-term socio-economic impacts of the Ebola crisis, including building and capacitating a new health system that can robustly deal with any future health challenge, and raising resources to address a legion of socio-economic, political, security, and other challenges made more acute by the presence of Ebola. We also take cognizance of the positive contributions of the United Nations mission in Liberia, OMEA, that has assisted us to enjoy 10 years of peace. OMEA's presence in Liberia, especially at a time when we were experiencing isolation, helped to reassure our people and create a security climate conducive to tackling some of the multifaceted challenges of the Ebola crisis. Therefore, OMEA's continued engagement in Liberia will be critical to enabling Liberia's transition from the Ebola crisis and resumption of implementation of strategies for the achievement of our long-term development agenda. Mr. President, Ebola is a difficult enemy that has frustrated and conquered our collective efforts in the past, causing some experts to project that in a worst-case scenario, about 1.4 million precious lives could be lost in our countries by January 2015. In spite of the gloom of today, and as Liberians ponder the question, will I or my wife, my husband, my child, my friend, or my workmate be one of those to populate the 1.4 million doomsday statistics, we do not sink into defeatism. Instead, President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and the resilient Liberian people feel that Ebola has presented us with a one-option multiple-choice test, and that option is to fight back. And we are fighting back. As President Sirleaf aptly put it, quote, I believe in the Liberian people. I believe that we are stronger than the greatest threat with which we are currently faced. And I believe we will prevail. The war did not defeat us. A completely destroyed economy, the greatest collapse since World War II, did not defeat us. Ebola would not defeat us, unquote. Mr. President, Mr. President, we know that the road ahead may be long, curvy, and hilly, but with bigger, bolder, timely, and sustained efforts on our part, buttressed by the international community, we are sure that dawn will soon break on this long, dark night occasioned by the Ebola virus disease. Thank you very much.
I thank the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Liberia.